Well, good evening. Once again, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Joan Paris, who, of course, is a traveling emissary who goes to meetings all around the world with Maurice Strong and Stephen Rockefeller and all of the leaders of the other side, the State of the World Forum, the Millennium Summit, the Food Summit. She's been to so many of these various meetings to keep you and I abreast of what's really going on in the world. And, of course, this move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. Well, we've been talking before, and we're going to continue this evening, talking about the USA Patriot Act. Now, the USA Patriot Act was pushed through Congress within just 46 days of the September 11th attack in 2001. In fact, it was signed into law that day, 46 days after the attack. But this law program, this legislation, had been in the hopper for a long period of time. It was most of the legislation that Bill Clinton couldn't get through after the Oklahoma City bombing, because, of course, it's designed not to have anything to do with Islamic terrorists, but to take away the freedom of the American people and to simply circumvent the restrictions that were placed in the Bill of Rights to limit the power of government so we would not have a dictatorship here in America. And, of course, it's really fascinating how they managed to do that. You know, on the evening of September 11th, 2001, Dick Cheney and his entire staff went on to Cipro. They, almost like they knew the anthrax attack was coming. Now, if they did, why didn't they tell the rest of the American people, or at least the rest of the people, maybe in the post office, that the attack was coming? Or why would they go on to a potentially dangerous drug and not tell anybody else that they suspected the anthrax attack was coming? And then, of course, when it came, it terrified the members of Congress. They could just hardly wait to, well, after all, vote for anything patriotic. And, well, they weren't allowed to read the bill beforehand. In fact, almost no one had read the bill and realized the draconian things that were in that legislation, designed not for patriotism, but to destroy the freedom, which, of course, was the hallmark of America. And so Joan has been studying the legislation. We've had 2 hours with her before. Hopefully we'll spend 2 hours tonight, and then maybe we'll put together a four-tape set on the USA Patriot Act so you will understand what is really in this legislation and realize this has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. It has everything to do with taking away our freedom. And if you really believe that we're concerned about Islamic terrorism, let me give you several pointers. First of all, since September 11th, other than the anthrax attack, which obviously Dick Cheney suspected or knew was coming, why, of course, there have been no other major attacks in America. How could that be if Islamic terrorism is such a threat? Why, very simply, we knew who the terrorists were. We arrested them all the day after or 2 days after after the attack. Who do you think all those people were? That we arrested 1,000 or more people immediately after the attack. And then, of course, we would never give their names because we didn't want Osama bin Laden to understand who we had arrested. No, they didn't want the American people to know they'd infiltrated the Islamic terrorist movement for years. They knew exactly who they were. They knew everything about them, and they arrested them and deported them. So, you know, and of course, they left our border open, but they're not worried about Islamic terrorists because they're tracking every Islamic terrorist in the world quite effectively. And, of course, the lawsuits against the people who are financing this whole movement, the Saudis, there's a $1 trillion lawsuit against the Saudi princes. And who's defending them but the president's lawyer, at least his law firm, Boyd and Baker and Hoyt. That's James Baker, the president's lawyer, who defended him in Florida. And, of course, there's so many other reasons to realize that the war on terrorism is really not a war on terrorism. It's a very clever ruse for taking away the freedom of the American people. In the name of fighting terrorism, because if you read the Patriot Act, there's not one word about Islamic terrorism. Good evening, Joan. How are you?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. I think I'd be better if I didn't have anything to do but bake cookies and...
no, life wouldn't be anywhere near as interesting, would it?
No, I guess not.
No, Joan, of course, is not only a mother of four, and she's two grown children and two children at home. She's a full-time researcher. She is a full-time executive. She has her own insurance agency, travels back and forth on a regular basis, all throughout the Silicon Valley, of visiting clients. So we're lucky to have her for an evening here, and we're going to, usually she's here in the studio, but tonight I think she was just a little tired, and I'm glad that we have her with us. So tell us about the USA Patriot Act.
I will, but let me say I'm the lucky one, because Dr. Stan, you have the most fantastic audience, and you are an incredible person. I don't know of anybody else in the world that has more credibility in bringing this information to your listeners.
Well, God bless you. I want you to tell my wife that now.
Okay, we'll get together. the thing that really strikes me, Dr. Stan, when I read this USA Patriot Act, that is how it brings together all of these things that I see and read from all of the global conferences, the UN conferences, and the other forums that, you know, Gorbachev puts together, and of course he works in tandem with the United Nations, more with the civil society end of it. And, you know, one of the things that Rockefeller explained to us at the Millennium Summit about this draft international covenant on environment and development that came out of the 1972 Stockholm Conference, which was the forerunner of all of these Earth summits that we've had, is this document says that we're going to achieve equity through the implementation of the international economic order and through transfers of resources to developing countries. And it also talks about the national and international procedures that are going to be necessary to assess, monitor, and control environmental impacts. And of course, environment is just a smokescreen for this global police state. And the key words there are, you know, monitor and control, and this is what the Patriot Act does. Now, when I was in South Africa a year ago at this environmental law conferences, we brought together chief justices and judges and attorneys and academics from all around the world. And before they had their conference, they had a little flyer about the conference. They said it was so important because the fatal flaw is how these people are going to translate different policies and treaties and operational laws that can be implemented and enforced. And force is what you get out of the Patriot Act. So what we're down to is setting up these legal regimes of compliance and control. And so many participants at this conference talked about, and these are their exact words, we have to move from monitoring to policing. And then, Dr. Stan, I pull out the Brahimi Report, which was prepared for the Millennium Summit in the year 2000. And it has 70 pages of recommendations on how the United Nations can be a more effective global force. They call it peacekeeping. There's nothing been peaceful about being under the regime of the United Nations. It's simply been one war after the next, one brutality, one atrocity after the next.
All right, fine. And of course, Brahimi, I think, was the Algerian ambassador, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
And of course, this report, if any of you are interested, and it is in a syllabus we put together after Joan came back from the Millennium Conference, and the complete Brahimi report is in there, and it's really all about policing and using the military for police and the police for military work. And if you want to read, you need to get the documentation of what Joan is talking about, and much of this would be in one or another of our reports. And what she's talking about now is in the Millennium Summit syllabus. You need to get this, you need to read it, you need to show it to others, and then of course you need to be able to express intelligently what this is about. So basically, what did the Brahimi report say about policing the population?
Well, it talks about member states, which of course includes the United States, of creating these pools, national pools of serving police officers to serve around the world, and it asks or you know, calls upon them to develop regional and joint training exercises, and I only mention this because this is all in the Patriot Act. And of course, it talks about, in paragraph 124, the Brahimi Report, of each member state designating a single point of contact within their governmental structure to be responsible for coordinating and managing all of these police for United Nations peace operations. Well, that might sound at first blush like, well, this is only, you know, police and military that we send around the world. No, it was at this conference, the Millennium Summit Conference, that it was stated that the United Nations and nations and states' police forces will not only be used in conflicts between states, but in intrastate conflicts. So within a nation, whether or not they give permission for it or not. So, you know, as we go through what's in this Patriot Act, we have to keep it in mind against the backdrop of this bigger picture, this bigger umbrella that's been created, or this framework that's been set out and structured for us. The Patriot Act, of course, the last program we did, Dr. Stan, we mostly outlined all of the financial implications. And just to recap a little bit of the financial, there's a verification of identification for all financial institutions now. They need to know your customer, and that, of course, KYC legislation was, you know, introduced even before all of this.
Because the government wants to know where all of your money is, so that if you are accused of being a terrorist, they can seize it, and they can seize that at any time for anybody. And, of course, then what are you going to do? How are you going to defend yourself? Well, the whole idea is you won't defend yourself because you've been accused, and automatically you must be guilty. And you see, that could never happen in America. If you read this bill and understand its implications, of course, this is not passed in the United States. This is passed as part of this whole program for the New World Dictatorship and, of course, the New World Religion coming together. And, of course, it was passed, really jammed through Congress out of fear, as the congressmen were cowering, fearful. Remember, they shut down the Congressional Office Building. They shut down many of the buildings in Washington, D.C. for fear of anthrax. And, of course, they would have voted for anything that was said to be patriotic. Only this wasn't patriotic at all. It was to do away with the protections that were given to us by our forefathers to prevent excesses by government. And that is what our founding fathers feared, was that when the government had the power, and then the people were powerless. The whole idea was to take the chains off of the people and put them on the government. Now, of course, they've taken the chains off of government, and they're forging them for the people.
Exactly. And in typical police state fashion, Section 326 of the USA Patriot Act says that there are lists that are to be kept of known or suspected terrorists. So here you just have a total perversion of the laws.
But do they find what a terrorist is? That's the interesting thing. Is there one word in there about Islamic terrorists or Osama bin Laden from Saudi Arabia or from Iraq?
No.
A terrorist is in the eye of the beholder, and the definition is anyone who, of course, really doesn't want to go along with what's happening, one who wants to change the government. Well, the greatest terrorists of all then are in the Council on Foreign Relations. They've been working for the last 50 years to change our form of government and replace our republic with a democracy, to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., to create a ruling Supreme Court unanswerable to the people that would legislate rather than interpret the law. So go ahead, Jane.
You know, just like a dictatorship, this is a very arbitrary, because the Secretary of the Treasury can waive these requirements for different institutions. So it's whatever the Secretary prescribes. So this is, more like a dictatorship than a constitutional republic.
Now, you're speaking now of financial requirements or financial reporting or what?
Yes, in keeping lists. But there are exemptions given or allowed for in this by the Secretary of the Treasury. You know, and I was going to say this all watching eye, to turn over the dollar bill, we see who the beholding us with the eye.
You mean you're talking about the pyramid cap by the all-seeing eye.
All-seeing eye.
Of course, every Satanist in America knows who that eye belongs to. Isn't it amazing that our churches and our church leaders and our political leaders and never tell us that this is an occult symbol of the ancient mystery religion and the eye is that of Lucifer?
Well, and you have such incredible resources available, Dr. Stan. This book that you carry by Dr. Kathy Burns, it's a large book, and it's just so revealing, and it really simplifies the process of a person coming to understand all of the occult symbols, because all of this is laced with the occult, and once your eyes are open a little bit, you see all of this much more easily.
Well, as it said on the X-Files, they hide their symbols in plain sight, and they do.
Yes.
It's all hidden in plain sight, and the people see it every day and don't even recognize what they're seeing.
There's another potential for abuse here in Section 327, and that the government will take into consideration the money, anti-money laundering record of financial institutions. And so if I'm a financial institution and I know that I'm going to get brownie points or special treatment if I'm good at getting some people, then I'm going to look for individuals that are maybe an easy target or somebody to make an example of. So this, in order to garner favoritism with the police powers that this sets up, and it's just so much potential for abuse in this. And then the President of the United States, in consultation with the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, is supposed to go into negotiations with the financial supervisory agencies and officials in foreign countries where the United States does business in order to target any so-called foreign terrorists. So here you have the sharing of information and the coming together of governments and all of the banking coming under one umbrella here to unite against potential terrorists. And of course, these are controlled by the international bankers.
You would think that they would do something about Saudi Arabia, which is really financing so much of this. Of course, before that, and you read the book Dollars for Terror, written in 1999, they pointed out the CIA's involvement in that. But what is really so interesting is this last week, why Senator Graham was talking about the report, the report of the investigation that is to be released this week. And he was talking about how so much of the report was classified so they couldn't tell the American people. And so much of it involved one of the nations that was actually, of course, financing the Saudi Arabian terrorists both before September 11th and afterwards. And the interviewer said, and we actually were able to pull this down off of CBS Face the Nation, the interviewer said, well, now let's get right to the matter here, Senator. Are you talking about Saudi Arabia? And Senator Graham said, well, I'm not allowed to say that. It's classified, and I don't want to have to take a detour to the federal penitentiary as long as I'm running to get into the White House. Now, here's a United States senator running for the presidency, and of course, he can't tell the American people that the Saudi Arabians are financing the terrorists. Why? Why? Because, of course, of the close ties with the Bush administration and the George Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush to the Saudis. And so they continue getting a get-out-of-jail-free ticket. They continue financing the terrorists. And, of course, we continue losing our freedom because we're involved in a war on terrorism. And anybody who would like to get that quotation can simply go up on cbsnews.com. It was Face the Nation this last Sunday, I believe it was. And so the United States senator can't tell the American people the Saudis are financing the terrorists. And, of course, the American people don't know. And they think the enemy is Osama bin Laden.
And that's why we can say that this Patriot Act is arbitrary and capricious in the application of its provisions.
Beautifully said. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joan Parris. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls when we get back from this break right here at Radio Liberty, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, our guest today is this evening is Joan Paris, a world traveler and executive and researcher. And go ahead, Joan, you tell us more about what's in this Patriot Act. And so much of it deals with finances. Why? Because they can control your finances. They can control you.
Well, and it's the people that want to control all the wealth of the world that are providing the concepts that go into this legislation. So they certainly are locking us up and controlling us. It's interesting that the federal government, our Secretary of State, the Attorney General, the Secretary of the Treasurer, our Treasury, are supposed to enter into cooperative agreements with other countries. And, you know, it's not just voluntary information exchanges, but mutual legal assistance treaties and international agreements. So you just have this whole internationalization of this effort to secure financial records from banks all around the world, not just in our own country. And as you were saying about the senator not being able to reveal what was in the documents, there's a section in the Patriot Act subtitled Bank Secrecy Act Amendments and Related Improvements. And anyway, it's the act makes so many of these reports secret. They cannot be revealed. And reporting that is of actual terrorists and just suspected terrorists. So we're creating a police state where all kinds of information is held in secret.
But we don't want to let Muhammad Atta know what we know about him. Right, go ahead.
Oh, and then, of course, the really unfortunate part here is, too, an immunity from civil liability for anyone who makes disclosures. So any financial institution and any authority, director, officer, employer, or agent of a financial institution that makes a disclosure of any, and here again, possible, and we're not talking about innocent until proven guilty, we're talking about guilty until proven innocent. So the disclosure of any possible violation of law or government regulation shall not be liable under any law, and this is interesting how they word this, Dr. Stan, under any law or regulation of the United States, any constitution, and that's a lowercase c, any constitution, law, or regulation of any state, with a capital S, or political subdivision of any state, or under any contract or other legally enforceable agreement, including any arbitration agreement. I mean, there is just, they've really got that language locked up. There is no legal way for a person to be held responsible for possible, you know, for any possible.
In other words, if you if your bank informs on you or anybody else informs on you, why, you have no recourse against them. And what we're really doing is setting up a state of informers, it sounds like. Is that it?
That is exactly what it is.
And then that's just like it was in Saddam Hussein's Iraq. I was reading an article in the Washington Post about some fellow, you know, went out with, he thought it was his friend, and very quietly they sat in a restaurant someplace, and of course this man was so frustrated with what Saddam was doing, and of course he didn't know he was being taped at the time, and of course he was immediately arrested and being hanged, and of course his friend got $100 for turning him in, and that's the way they do it. But of course people cannot believe that sort of thing could go on in this country. But remember Randy Weaver? You remember how they had infiltrated their spies in at Waco? You remember, of course, they had infiltrated the Islamic terrorists in 1993 in New York before the first World Trade Center bombing. In fact, it was their agent, Mr. Salem, who was encouraging the Islamic radicals there to carry out acts of terrorism. They weren't even thinking about it, but he got them whipped up into a frenzy, and they agreed they were going to blow up the Brooklyn Bridge or something. And then they used that, of course, to arrest the Sheikh Omar Rahman. Now, well, the significance of that was, and I'm going to get right back to the Patriot Act, but the significance of that was that there were actually three leaders of the world terrorist movement, the Islam fundamentalist movement. The main leader was a man named Azam, who of course was assassinated at the behest, I don't know whether the CIA or Osama bin Laden. The second one was Rahman, who the CIA brought to the United States, according to the book Unholy Wars. And then, of course, he was set up to be arrested. And with him in jail, of course, then who would lead the whole world radical Islamic movement? None other than our good friend, Osama bin Laden, who we just can't find, despite the fact he's got four wives and 20 or more children with him. We just can't find the wicked Osama bin Laden. So go ahead and pick up from there, Jan.
Well, and then, you know, along with this immunity from disclosures, there is a further step, and under Section 351 of the Patriot Act, there is a prohibition on notification of disclosures.
In other words, if your bank turns you in, why, they can't tell you.
Exactly. Nobody in that organization can let anybody know. In fact, anybody in the government, there's no officer of the government that can disclose that any report was made. So it's mandated by law to keep any reporting.
So the public is not to know that they're being spied on at the behest of the government.
Or perhaps, you know, defamed.
All right, go ahead. In other words, the report could be inaccurate, but they don't even know they've been reported.
Right. And then under the anti-money laundering programs, there's mandate to create compliance officers for all financial institutions. And a financial institution, of course, we need to understand, is not just banks. This is insurance companies. It's securities and commodities trading. It's credit unions. It's any institution that has to deal with financial things. And insurance companies, of course, did not used to be involved in financial, but with a change in the laws over the past 10 years or so, they are now under the umbrella or under the auspices of the central banks.
Can you speak up just a little bit louder, Jen?
Yes.
Okay,
and
go ahead.
And this is interesting to me because in my insurance business, I have experienced the compliance officer. She comes around once a year, asks a lot of questions, goes through a check sheet, and monitors every possible facet of your operation. In fact, she's now communicating with the management about my computer and my emails and all kinds of things. So this is really a police state type operation that is being set up.
Well, now, you're an insurance, saleswoman. How would this apply to you and your business?
Well, you would think part of it is anyone coming in that would pay cash for a policy. Say, for example, a life insurance policy where a person could pay cash and they might be laundering money in that way. That would be the obvious. But the not so obvious is there's a section of the Patriot Act that refers to the monitoring of computers. Well, I'm part of this computer system that my insurance company has, and I am not allowed to have any personal emails. And boy, I'll tell you, I'm in the process of transferring, you know, UN memos and things that I get from people all over the world to, you know, another computer. But, you know, they can look at all of those things under the Patriot Act. The definition of terrorist is so broad, I mean, I could be a bad person.
In other words, because you oppose the coming dictatorship, why, you then become the terrorist. And the thing is, this is the most amazing thing, the definition of what a terrorist is.
And we'll get to that.
And they are the ones who want to change our form of government. Now, I think that most of our listeners believe in the Constitution, believe in our way of life. But, of course, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about you as a potential terrorist because of the goal, the major goal of the United States is this one-world government, taking down our tariffs, taking down our border restrictions, do away with our sovereignty, move us into the one-world government. And if you don't want to go along with that, why, then you are a potential terrorist. If you don't believe that, go to my website at RadioLiberty.com. Look at the FBI description in 1999 of what a terrorist is. You know how you can tell one? He talks about the Constitution. Oh, terrible. We'll be right back here in just a moment and welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Joan Paris. We're talking about the USA Patriot Act. And of course now they're going to come up with even more draconian controls over our lives. Of course, always in the name of fighting terrorism. And of course it's been pointed out that they're using the Terrorist Act to go after common criminals. But of course, John Ashcroft has said, well, I'm going to use every bit of the law we have, you know, to get these people. And it reminds me of Bobby Kennedy talking about the mafia, who said, I'll arrest them for spitting on the sidewalk. Well, wait a minute now. I may not like the mafia, but we have to be a nation of laws where the government has to obey the law just as everybody else. And what happens when you have people in government who want to arrest you because you are presumed to be guilty? And so they're going to find a means to go after you. Is that really what justice is about, or is that what justice is becoming? Go ahead, Joan.
Well, and then the final little poison thing here in Section 355 is that if you have worked for a depository institution and somebody there suspects that you could possibly have been involved in any type of terrorism or wrongdoing, then they can send written references to any other depository institution without your knowing it, and really ruin your reputation again without having the chance to face your accuser. And
now, by depository, you mean a bank or insurance policy or what?
Well, this specifically refers to insured depository institutions. So this, I would believe, is more like a traditional bank.
Okay.
And then we move out of this Title III portion into Title IV. Title IV of the Patriot Act talks about protecting the border, and it talks about protecting the northern border, first of all, and it authorizes enough money to triple the number of Border Patrol personnel and triple the number of Customs Service personnel and also the number of INS inspectors along the northern border and the ports. And then in addition to that, it authorizes an additional sum of $50 million each to the INS and then to the Customs Service to improve monitoring technology and for acquiring additional equipment. So this would be, you know, surveillance monitoring. And when I read that, I thought, okay, well, that's nice, the northern border. But I really am interested in what they're going to do for the southern border. Dr. Stan, there is not one word in this document about our southern border, where we're having all the problems.
Well, of course, but they're not interested in solving that. They want the open border so they, you know, so that the people can come in from Mexico. But they don't want to tell the American people that, you know, taking away the jobs. In fact, so many of our people are having difficulty getting jobs because, of course, the illegals will come in and work much, much more cheaply. But the whole idea is eventually we're going to just do away with our borders altogether and our sovereignty and transfer our wealth to other nations, from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. It's an old Marxist dictum which our leaders really believe, because they believe in redistributing the wealth of the middle class, not their own wealth, of course. So, they have no intention of closing the borders, though they'll pay lip service to it. But that's, of course, why here in California, why if you're an illegal alien, you can go to our colleges cheaper than if you're a citizen of Nevada, an American citizen, and want to come into California. You don't get the break, but illegal aliens get special lower tuitions as long as they're here illegally. In fact, if they were a legal Mexican from Nevada, it would cost them more than an illegal alien here in California. What's wrong with that? Why, very, very simply, there is an agenda. They just don't want the American people to know.
So, well, maybe, you know, this is also because we've got this United States-Mexico Border 21 program, La Frontera 21, and, you know, that's that 100-mile-wide strip north and south that goes from the ocean to the west and the ocean all the way over, or the Gulf to the east, and it creates this environmental enforcement and compliance zone that's that's administered jointly with the United States government and the Mexican government.
Just one big happy family.
One big happy family.
And soon we'll all be, the whole world will be one big happy family with, of course, the ruling elite who are manipulating this whole thing, and the average individual has no idea what's going on.
Right. So in Title IV, it also calls for setting up the Integrated Automated Fingerprint Identification System, IAFIS. In 2 years from the enactment of this bill, Congress is supposed to make a decision on the feasibility of that, because, of course, they're searching for all different ways to effectively monitor and control people. And then let's get to these definitions relating to terrorism, and these appear in a couple of places in the Act, but under Section 411, of course, it says that it's a foreign terrorist organization as designated by the Secretary of State, and it's also a political, social, or other similar group whose public endorsement of acts of terrorist activity the Secretary of State determines undermines United States efforts to reduce or eliminate terrorist activities. And it also refers to someone who uses a firearm or other weapon or dangerous device. So here we have language that is very open-ended, very broad, not well-defined. And to engage in terrorist activity means an individual or someone who's acting as a member of an organization to commit or incite to commit under circumstances indicating an intention to cause death or serious bodily injury, a terrorist activity, to prepare a plan or plan a terrorist activity, or to gather information on potential targets for terrorist activity, or for to solicit funds or other things of value for a terrorist activity, a terrorist organization, to solicit any individual or commit an act that the actor knows or reasonably should know affords material support, including a safe house, transportation, communications, funds, transfer of funds or other material financial benefit, false documentation or identification, weapons, including chemical, biological, or radiological weapons, explosives for training for the commission of a terrorist activity. So this is terrorism is the boogeyman. It's used as a central organizing principle now to move us into the next phase of the New World Order.
You know, I think it's so interesting, and I know that you had gotten this for me. Of course, back in 1999, why the United States Commission on Security in the 21st Century, and made up of 14 people, 13 of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations. The committee was co-chaired by ex-Senator Gary Hart and ex-Senator Warren Rudman. And in 1999, they were talking about terrorist attacks on America. Americans would die on American soil. And, of course, all of this danger of terrorist attacks. And, you know, with this danger of terrorist attacks, the FBI was given massive increase in funding in 1996 watch the terrorists here in the United States. And yet, of course, any member of the FBI who tried to track the terrorists here in this country got into real trouble. And that's why Mr. O'Neill quit the FBI, because he was blocked at every turn. And so many of the FBI agents who wanted to monitor the Saudi terrorists just weren't allowed to do it. The question is, why, you know, before the 9/11 attack, wouldn't they allow them to track the terrorists, to do anything about the terrorists, to cut off the funding, much of which was coming from the United States? And now, of course, they're just so upset about the danger of terrorism. And yet there hasn't been not one single attack since September 11th, 2001. Now, what's wrong with this scenario? And, of course, maybe, of course, this is not aimed at the Islamic terrorists, but people who love America.
Well, and the other aspect of this, Dr. Stan, it's the Secretary of State that determines terrorist activity and the definition and the scope of it. When I'm at an environmental law conference or at the, sustainable development conference in Africa, it's the Secretary of State that is basically leading the United States representation there, and it was the State Department that sponsored all of these Summit Institute classes for training other governments on how to implement, you know, effective regimes for environmental control. I mean, we're talking about dozens and dozens of classes that were led by the United States government in implementing this New World Order. It was the Undersecretary of State, John Turner, who was really the person that was leading the delegation on the ground. Colin Powell, the figurehead, yes, he showed up, but it was John Turner that was present at all of these conferences. And he said, we are at a global campfire. And he told the assembled international audience that Americans are committed to leading this charge or the move to the implementation of sustainable development. Well, the American people haven't read that in their newspapers, and they have no idea.
No, they don't understand that sustainable development is really a key word for Marxism or socialism. Joan, I'm going to take another caller, but somebody called in. They can't hear you. So I'm going to ask if you hang up, and I'm going to ask Dale to call you right back.
Okay.
In the meantime, I'm going to talk to Ron from Richland. We'll be right back.
All
right.
Minute.
Okay, so hang on. I'm going to take, and of course, would you mind picking up Joan there, and of course I'll talk to Ron from Richland. Hi, Ron, how are you doing?
Well, hi, Dr. Stan.
Hi, good to hear
you. I had a question here.
All right, fine.
Well, how come the American Center for Law and Justice, an organization which I respect a great deal, is supporting the Patriot Act, and the American Civil Liberties Union, which is neither civil nor for liberty, is against the Patriot Act?
We live in a world gone mad. And, of course, I think that the ACLU, in this instance, is concerned that this has potential to take away our liberty. And, of course, the American Center for Law and Justice says, we give up our liberty because we've got to, of course, go after these wicked, wicked terrorists. So I think that it's very, very interesting as you begin looking and seeing what's going on. Remember, you never judge a person by what they say. You watch what they do. There was a recent article in The Humanist, the Commentary magazine, which is a neocon publication put out. In fact, the editor or the publisher is a man named Norman Potteroach, who is one of the members of the PNAC group. And the lead article was by, of all people, Judge Bork, totally in favor of this massive monitoring of the American people in the name of protecting our freedom. So why would the ACLU be on the right side? Because, of course, they have to be on the right side once in a while. And I think that they are rightfully concerned about the loss of our freedom from this. And I think that the American Center of Law and Justice and many of our good organizations are being misled. And there's almost a blind feeling, well, if our Christian president wants these things, it's got to be good. And I would like to suggest that maybe George Bush really doesn't know what's going on. He certainly didn't know what was going on with his speech. In fact, as you analyze the speech that's causing so much concern, I didn't know anything about that speech. I was just sort of reading the speech. Well, how much else is going on today that he really doesn't know what's going on? Then this legislation obviously was prepared long before the September 11th attack, but I think by some very wicked people.
Well, have you talked to Jay Sekulow?
No, I haven't talked to him, and if he'd like to talk to me, but I will tell you that you have to just look and see what the bill says. Would you want to have that power in the hands of Hillary Clinton?
No.
All right, fine.
Well, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to have absolute power.
And that's what this is all about. It really repeals the Fourth and the Fifth Amendments, and I think that we should be very, very concerned about it.
I mean, to monitor this, you should need a court order.
But you see, you don't. And this really does away with the necessity for court orders. This is a frightening piece of legislation. And, well, of course, you'll have to... Why don't you call Jay Sekulow and ask him why he supports this legislation, which obviously does an end run around the Bill of Rights, which was designed to protect us from excesses of government, and why we need this when, of course, they never once mentioned Islamic terrorism. I think that this is going to help us to understand where people are really coming from.
Well, see, I think he's on the level. That's the one thing that puzzles me.
Right. Well, you'll just have to work that out with him.
Okay. Well,
okay, but I'll say that what we're seeing is sometimes I find that I agree with people that I ordinarily wouldn't agree with. Uh-oh, we just lost Ron. Ron, if you want to call back, you can. Joan, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, fine. Let's hope that'll work out better. Ron, of course, was, let me just tell you what he said. He said, you know, he's puzzled. Ron's comes from Richland, Washington, and one of our regular listeners. And he said, look, he said, the ACLU opposes the USA Patriot Act, and Jay Sekulow, and of course the American Institute for Law and Order, I don't know what it is, but anyway, it's a branch of the Pat Robertson group there. They fully support this legislation. So how would you answer him? He said, why would you want to be, the difference was, why would you want to be on the side of the ACLU when we've always been able to trust Jay Sekulow and everything he said in the past has been good, and yet he supports this Patriot Act. Maybe it isn't so bad.
Well,
how would you respond to that?
We're not, that's a very tough question, and we're not on the side of the ACLU, but, you know, because the way the ACLU would interpret this is that there are protections in here against terrorism. And of course, the ACLU is for this unbridled, even abuse of our Constitution. And that's not what we stand for. And I think that there are so few organizations that really delve into the whole global framework that if you just take this as a standalone document and look at it, you would think, yes, we're protecting Americans from foreign terrorists. But if you actually read the international documents and go to the conferences, then you see it in the backdrop of a much bigger picture. And then look at the way American freedoms and liberties are being taken away. When you walk through the airport and they're, you know, searching a grandmother or, you know, a young mother, people that, these are not terrorists. Why are we doing this to grandmothers? Why are we not targeting the real terrorists? This is what this legislation is doing. It's not protecting terrorists. It's taking away the liberties of law-abiding, God-fearing American citizens, and that's wrong. And what makes it so wrong is that it's so blatant that we are not targeting the real problem areas. We are letting in untold millions of immigrants to this country. We are, you know, illegal, legal, otherwise. We have created all kinds of venues for people to come in, these H-1, H-1B, all these visas that allow people to come in and take away American jobs. You know, some of these people are terrorists. There is absolutely no protection for Americans here. It's more as, you know, that all these things we're doing are helping the terrorists.
Well, of course, you think you have to understand, when you go to the airport, this is all perception. This is all a mind game that they're playing with us. You know, of course, the whole idea is to give you the impression that there's a real threat of terrorism, and that's why we have people take off their shoes, and unless you're wearing tennis shoes, of course. You can wear tennis shoes, too, but you can't wear regular shoes, and you know the story. Of course, the thing is that Robert John Reed, the mad terrorist, was wearing tennis shoes. He wasn't wearing regular shoes, and if the explosives were in his tennis shoes, the only trouble was, of course, it was C4 was in the soles of his shoes, and he's supposed to light the fuse on his tennis shoes and set off the C4. The only trouble is you can't set off C4 with a lighted fuse. You have to have blaster caps, and so obviously he was set up for this whole thing to give this perception that you could have a bomb in your school shoes, and of course they didn't want anybody to be hurt, so they told him to light it with a fuse, and knowing full well you can burn C4. In fact, I know people were in Korea, and they, of course, commented that, you know, when they were fighting in Korea, they'd burn C4 because it would keep them warm. You can't explode it without blasting caps. But poor old John Reed will spend the rest of his life in prison. He was set up, but the American people, gullible as they are, dutifully take off their shoes now, unless, of course, they're wearing tennis shoes, because there might be a bomb in their shoes. Let's go to Jeannie calling in. Hi, Jeannie. How
are
you doing?
Well, I'm fine. And how are you, Doc?
Doing great.
Yeah. And hi, John.
Hi, Jeannie.
I was curious, Does it mention anything in that particular report regarding the National Security Advisor? Because I came across on the website, there was a meeting of all the former National Security Advisors. And it was put on by Lee Hamilton. He's an ex-congressman, but he's very well known in Central America for writing the letter to Comandante Ortega and really supporting the communist guerrillas in Central America in the El Salvadorian War. And he was the moderator of this session with the former National Security Advisors. And he's also director of the Wilson Center, Woodrow Wilson Center. But they were talking about what their mission was and how there's few people that are born that are first-rate intellectuals. And they classified themselves as being the intellectuals that had this job as the National Security Advisor.
Well, that's
wondering if you came across that.
You know, it doesn't stand out in my mind. The first 80 pages of the 143 have to do with financial mechanisms.
This is the USA Patriot Act.
The Patriot Act, right. And it most frequently mentions, number one, the Secretary of the Treasury. And then it will mention the Secretary of State and one other department, Attorney General. Those are the most commonly mentioned. But then there are other sections where it mentions other portions of government. So I'll have to look at it more closely to see if the National Security Advisor is injected in here. But the other thing that's very difficult about this act is this is simply, a lot of it just contains phrases and language that amends, at least a couple of dozen other bills that have been on the books for decades, like the crime omnibus bill and all of these acts that have been passed before. So this is not a standalone document to really find out everything that this touches. You would have to go to every bit of legislation that's ever been enacted that this amends, and it is, I'm serious, probably at least a couple dozen bills.
You know, I remember you having a show on, it was the U.S. Commission on National Security, 21st Century,
yes.
And there were three phases.
Right.
And you talked about the New World coming. That was the first phase.
Yes.
And I did a little show on the Phase 3 report.
Uh-huh.
And it got into how they were going to change the procedures in the executive and the legislative branches in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
And it mentions 2025. That is the date. If everything goes okay, Joan and Dr. Stan, that is the date when there's no turning back. They will have us locked in. So they're looking specifically, the elitists, at 2025.
Well, gee, we've got lots of time then, don't we?
Yes, we do have
maybe
time.
Maybe we ought to just take a vacation, not worry about it. And of course, Jeannie, what you're talking about is this idea of an elite, and this is really what it's all about. As David Rockefeller told my friend, Congressman William Dannemeyer, some men are born to rule, but most men are born to be ruled. And of course, these people believe that they have the right to rule, and under our contemporary form of government, where you limit the power of government, they can't rule. That's why they have, of course, to do an end run around the Constitution, take away the limitations placed on government by one ruse or another, and this is certainly one of those ruses, the USA Patriot Act, and then, of course, in the name of protecting us and keeping our freedom, they strip our freedom away.
Now, I have to mention one thing about the National Security Advisor. This position is not confirmed by the Senate. And in the Phase 3 of the report that we were just talking about, it says the National Security Advisor has to keep a low profile. And as we know, Ms. Rice, she speaks fluent Russian. And looking at this, of what the role of the National Security Advisor, I believe very strongly that is the counterpart for the Russian government. and the National Security Advisor works with the President to converge the Soviet Union and the United States.
Well, it converges the whole world, rather, yeah. Gosh. But the Soviet Union is certainly one of the major things that we've been working for years to converge. In fact, we already signed contracts with them as far as having the same forms of education in both countries. And of course, they're living a little more freedom over there. You know, the difference between Russia and America, somebody once said that the only difference between Russia and America is in Russia, everybody knows the press is controlled. Everybody here, everybody thinks they're getting the truth. Oh, anything else, Jeannie?
No, that's it.
You know,
for the show.
Thank you for that input, Jeannie. Jeannie is just always ahead of the curve with her information and her research, and so it's very valuable. We listen to Jeannie. And the Homeland Security Act might be something that incorporates that in more detail, because this Patriot Act, really, the bulk of it addresses our financial mechanisms and institutions. And, of course, if we're implementing this global economic order, then this is a document that addresses a lot of that.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand that there is a plan. And, of course, a little bit by little bit, our freedom is restricted from us. But it happened so slowly, at least in the past, that most people weren't aware. Until one day we wake up and we find out we've lost the right to our property. Suddenly we can't lumber on our property or cut down a tree because we might interfere with the habitat of a squirrel or an owl or something. And little bit by little bit, our freedom is taken away in the name of preserving wetlands. We used to call them swamps, but now we call them wetlands. And of course, we have to protect the red-legged frog and the brown-legged frog and the purple-legged frog and of course the butterflies but all of this has nothing to do with the legislation as it was enacted by our congressman. They are sold one bill of goods. The purpose behind the legislation is something entirely different. And I'm sure there are many good people who really want to fight terrorism, and I think we should fight terrorism. But I think the first thing we ought to do is cut off the funding coming from Saudi Arabia. Those who haven't read the wonderful book, Hatred's Kingdom, we do carry that. It's by Adore Gold, the former ambassador to the United Nations, and a fascinating, fascinating insight, of course, into who's funding the terrorists, and then, of course, who's backing the people who are funding the terrorists, and there's something very, very wrong with the picture. Well, we've got about two more minutes before we have to go for this hour. Go ahead with a couple other points you wanted to make.
Well, you know, just to address what Ron was talking about, and again, we need to look at this against the backdrop of a global picture. Al Gore talked about the environment being the central organizing principle. As we move into this police state, terrorism is the central organizing principle. And a little pamphlet that was given to us that was authored or put together by Kofi Annan of the United Nations at the 2000 Millennium Summit. This brochure said that they were putting together an action plan to make globalization work for people everywhere. And he mentioned that in 1945, the founders of the United Nations set up a system for an international world order. It states that in the brochure. To make it possible for globalization to emerge.
We're going to have to interrupt you there and just a bit adieu to our listeners up in the Great Northwest and remind them Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you believe that we have something that's important, that this message needs to get out even further, we hope many of you will join the Radio Liberty family because that's how we're able to be on stations across America. Most of them are just half an hour a week, but at least people are hearing the truth. They'll never hear otherwise. If you'd like to know more about joining the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, because if we don't turn back to God, God will never again bless this nation. And lastly, please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, if you're out across America, why, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, of course, right now you can call anytime you want to. Our guest is Joan Paris, world traveler. Has been to so many of the international conferences, mother, businesswoman, and, of course, a researcher and frequent guest here at Radio Liberty. All right, Joan, let you go on and tell us more about the incredible things here in the USA Patriot Act.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, could I just digress onto this whole global backdrop? Because I think it's so important to make the connection to why this isn't something that is just having to do with the United States, that there's this whole global agenda, and we can bring a little bit more concrete backdrop to this for people to see how this fits in.
Well, that's the nice thing about these programs, is there are no rules. We can do whatever we want to, so go ahead.
Well, anyway, as I was saying in the end of the last hour, that, and I was at the United Nations Millennium Summit in 2000, Kofi Annan put together a threefold brochure, mostly for the press and attendees. And he talked about the founders of the United Nations in 1945 setting up a system for an international world order. And by doing this, it would make it possible for globalization to emerge. And that in order to respond to this, it was going to be a really big challenge for world leaders. And in the new world, that groups and individuals more and more often were going to interact directly across frontiers without involving the state, but that there would be new dangers. And he listed in that brochure that the new dangers were crime, narcotics, terrorism, pollution, disease, weapons, refugees, and migrants. So here I saw in this brochure that the problems were being created. They were being set up for us. These are what the problems are going to be. And then the United Nations or the global elite comes in with their solution behind it. And this is that famous phrase that we hear in the occult, ordo ab chaos, order out of chaos, where you have this dialectic where you set up, you know, the thesis and then the antithesis, and then you merge it all.
Well, the new synthesis, right.
The synthesis, okay. And Kofi Annan stated that we would draw strength from each other by acting within common institutions based on shared rules and values. And to make it possible for this international world order to emerge, this Millennium Summit set forth about three major goals. And one of those major agendas was called the security agenda, Dr. Stan, and they also called it freedom from fear. And this agenda talked about the illicit transfers of weapons, money, and natural resources. Well, the Patriot Act completely addresses the money issue, and it mentions weapons in a number of places. And it says that these types of illicit transfers are going to be forced into the limelight. That's exactly what the Patriot Act does. And it says that it does this in order to provide individuals and communities the security that they've come to expect. They stated that no legal principle, not even sovereignty, should be used to shield crimes against humanity. So then we ask, well, who's going to define these crimes? And, of course, the Freedom from Fear report that was posted on a United Nations website said that as we look ahead, we can see real risks that resource depletion. Here's the environmental agenda. What's this got to do with this world army. Well, it says that the real risks are resource depletion, especially fresh water scarcities, as well as severe forms of environmental degradation, will increase social and political tensions in unpredictable and potentially dangerous ways. So, you know, they're scaring us, and they say that they're going to strengthen peace operations and support regional disarmament measures. Dr. Sam, this is the global picture. This is how we're going to see terrorism spread out or emerging. It's not going to be somebody that's coming and dropping a bomb, but it's also this whole environmental degradation, supposedly, and scarcity of fresh water. Now, there's a shortage that's been completely created, and the controls, the solutions that are being put forth will impose draconian police state controls on people. They're going to control our water to make us conform to this new world order. And it's only when we look at these laws that are being put forth, and when we look at the footnotes in the Supreme Court decisions that are coming out, if we dig into those and read them, that we see how this meshes into the backdrop of the emerging new world order. That's the only way we can look at it and make any sense of it. And these other organizations that, you know, are taking a, you know, an opposition to it or a support of it are really not going that far into it, because, as you know, Dr. Stan, you've spent over 30 years in this quest to understand the global agenda. It takes years of research and study to begin to make any sense of it. So it's no negative connotation on a person asking this kind of question. It's a very sensible question that needs to be asked. But unless you have this great big picture, it's impossible to understand what is happening to us. And that's why most Americans are asleep at the wheel. Our churches, that should be at the forefront of this battle, are not leading. They are not stepping forth, stepping up to the plate to lead us in this battle that is at the very foundation nothing more than a spiritual battle manifested in so many physical ways. And so we have a very, very serious lack of leadership. And it, you know, people are going to perish. My people will perish for lack of
lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge. My friend
Joanne
quoted that to me the other day.
Well, I think that, you know, that one of the problems that perhaps, I don't think Ron's still listening, because we had to break off with our listeners
right
up in the Great Northwest. Maybe he's listening on Internet. And those of you out there, please tell others about our website, and they can listen to our Internet programs 5 hours a day. Not get much done, but they can listen 5 hours a day. But, you know, there is a feeling on the part of lots of people today that, of course, our job is to support the president. After all, he's a Christian. He's got a Christian administration. He's certainly entirely different than Bill Clinton was. And, of course, you criticize anything that the administration is doing, and you'll find some very, very fine people who just go ballistic. And they are well-meaning people, but they're not thinking this thing through. I believe in congratulating the president when he does something right, and I think he was very right in, of course, not signing the Kyoto Protocol, and I think he's very right in staying out of the International Criminal Court, and I applaud that. But I think that a lot of things that go on that are bad, we have to speak out. Now, it doesn't mean that even George Bush knows what's going on. He certainly had no idea what was in his speech that he gave that's caused all the embarrassment. You have to understand the president is run by his advisors. This is always the way that it is. The president is a figurehead for a power elite, and of course usually the people who surround the president are picked by the people who put the president into power. So they have an agenda. They know exactly what they're doing. Whether the president knows or not, I don't know. But I think that we do a disservice to our country and to our children by not speaking out. And I'm not going to change my position because somebody else is wrong or because somebody doesn't like what I say. And we've, of course, lost supporters because of some of the positions we take. But we have to do what's right because we're answerable basically to God. And if I'm amazed that we haven't lost a lot more of our supporters because of the strong position we took opposing the war with Iraq, not because we opposed getting rid of Saddam Hussein, but because the United States CIA and our government has been keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And those of you who have doubt that need to get the book entitled See No Evil, written by an ex-CIA agent, which points out how we kept Saddam Hussein in power. And, of course, why would we do something like that? Well, of course, he was the best enemy that we could possibly have for times like this. And, of course, the great tragedy is he was used now to justify permanently stationing American troops in the Middle East at this time in history. Because I believe there is a script that's been written long before this. And, of course, behind that, of course, are these spiritual forces you allude to. Well, is there anything else you want to say on this? You want to get back to the USA Patriot Act?
I'll go back to the Patriot Act, but I just wanted to give some of that global backdrop. Title 4, there is also some very disturbing changes that have to do with habeas corpus and judicial review. And there are cases where the habeas corpus is suspended, and no court, it says that no court shall have jurisdiction to review by habeas corpus petition or otherwise any such action or decision. But then it goes on a little bit further and says that such a review can only be initiated with filing an application at the Supreme Court or with a justice of the Supreme Court or a circuit judge of the United States Court of Appeals, but only for the District of Columbia. And this act amends the circuit court, the number of judges that will be on the circuit court for the District of Columbia. It increases it.
Now, wait a minute. The right of habeas corpus is a fundamental right of our judicial system. How can they suspend that even in the name of fighting terrorism?
I don't know.
Well, why isn't Jay Sekulow concerned about that? I would think that every American would be concerned about suspending the habeas. Maybe Jay Sekulow hasn't read the USA Patriot Act.
He probably hasn't read it.
All right, fine. Well, what are some of the other good points about this?
Okay, let's see.
Now, under what circumstances can they suspend habeas corpus? If you are accused of being a terrorist or under some sort of an emergency status or statute, when can they suspend the right of habeas corpus?
Well, I don't think it needs to be any emergency. It's just whenever a person is suspected. It says the Attorney General shall take into custody any alien who is certified under paragraph 3. You know, in any situation where a person is suspected of being a terrorist, they can detain them.
Well, now, is that for American citizens or just for aliens?
An alien.
All right, fine. So that really doesn't apply to American citizens then?
Not yet.
Okay.
But, you know, they want to broaden this thing.
Okay, well, I share your concern.
And the other point, too, Dr. Stan, when it defines a terrorist, you know, it talks about someone who is an agent of a foreign government. Well, what does it take to be an agent of a foreign government? Any of us could be accused. I mean, when you allow this thing to be interpreted in its broadest sense, anybody could come back and be considered an agent of a foreign government that's supporting their goals and objectives that are hostile to United States and United States citizens. So ultimately, it could come back, I would think, in the broadest sense. These people can be detained for, up to 6 months. And if they're considered to be threatening the national security of the United States or the safety of the community or any person, any one person. So this is really very, very broad. Section 413 talks about multilateral cooperation against terrorists and the Department of State, on the basis of reciprocity, can provide a foreign government information in the State Department's computerized visa lookout database. And again, this ability of the State Department concerns me when I see what the role of our State Department is abroad. And that's not to impugn everybody in the State Department. There are wonderful people that work there, but there are also very evil people that work there whose sole objective is to bring us into this new world order. And so there's a lot of power here that's ascribed to the Department of State. And
the Department of State has always been, since 1945, an extension of the Council on Foreign Relations, that if there was ever a secret terrorist organization, it's that one, because it, of course, is the front for Cecil Rhodes' secret society. Its goal is to change America forever, to do away with national sovereignty, and to take us into the New World Order. That's its stated goal. The people who belong to it and come out have said that. So basically, what we maybe ought to do is report them as potential terrorists, because the definition of a terrorist is anybody who wants to change the status of our government, isn't it?
That's right.
Right. Well, then, of course, these people are the terrorists.
Well, and then... Yeah, but we're not the ones with the police power, and our constitutional liberties and freedoms are being taken away.
Right.
So we're having less and less ability to fight this, and that's the whole poison that's in this act. And part of this multilateral cooperation with our State Department and other countries includes, but is not limited to, terrorism or trafficking in controlled substances, persons, or illicit weapons. So it's very broad. We think we're talking about terrorism, but there's so many provisions here that can be expanded into just about any type of a crime, Dr. Stan. The issue of control in Section 414, talking about visa security and integrity, well, we want to see more control, but eventually for whom? We see this coming back on American citizens. We think we're controlling those who are, you know, entering and exiting the country. But this integrated entry and exit data system for our ports of entry, all you have to do is take a ride on an airplane to see who's being controlled. It's the American citizen made to look like fools going through the airport. There is also all of these open-ended provisions in this act that allow for money to be appropriated to enact this. This whole visa integrity system is open-ended. It provides an unlimited amount of funds. The bill calls for a focus on biometric technologies, moving us towards a mark. And all of this will interface with the law enforcement databases. There's a whole section in here on immigrants, Dr. Stan. And one section that's interesting, there's several pages, it talks about diversity immigrants. And under the Immigration and Nationality Act it was 2001. If you wanted to get into the country and you didn't make it in that year, then the next year they would just call you a diversity immigrant so that you could get in. It's really sad how this thing is manipulated and abused, and the poor old American citizen is footing the bill and giving up all of their liberties to boot. The Attorney General has this authority to pay rewards to combat terrorism, and...
Now, wait a minute. What are these paying rewards? Is this that they're supposed to... they'll get money for turning in or reporting on people who may be terrorists?
Sure. It could be implemented in all kinds of ways. And if the reward is $250,000 or more... then it has to be made with the personal approval of the Attorney General or the President. But my goodness, if it's less than $250,000, I can see all kinds of people stepping forward for that. Any executive agency or military department can also kick in funds to the Attorney Generals to pay rewards. And here's something terrible, that neither the failure of the Attorney General to authorize a payment nor withhold a payment will be subject to judicial review. What happened to the balance of powers in our government? Judicial review is completely removed from this process. And anyway, it says that no reward should be subject to any per or aggregate reward spending limitation established by law. In other words, it's unlimited. It could be unlimited. So the Secretary of State has this authority to pay rewards, and it could be in the millions of dollars. And I think we're seeing this with what's happening right now in Iraq with the assassination of Saddam's sons. We have the payment of these rewards. And it's interesting, when you move down to the next section of the Act, Section 203, it calls for the DNA identification of terrorists and other violent offenders. So I think we see a lot of these provisions being tried out here. And all of this has to be coordinated with law enforcement and the information acquired from electronic surveillance. So when we talk about all of the, in the Brahimi report, the coordination of all the police around the world and their information sharing and their electronic surveillance, we see how this whole global thing comes together in this. And it doesn't have to be an actual attack. It could be just a potential attack or other grave hostile acts of a foreign power or an agent, again, an agent of a foreign power. And it could be clandestine intelligence activities. Well, what are clandestine intelligence activities? Is my attending a global meeting and, taking notes as a reporter so that we can all understand what happens in the world? Is that clandestine? I don't know, but I think we should all have some concern about it. And, of course, the telephone and all of your transaction records are open to scrutiny. Of course, your telephone company is required to report you if they think that there's a potential for a danger. And that would include your name, your address, your length of service, all of your billing records in order to protect against terrorism. That's a real abridgment of our First Amendments and other provisions that we have. Our financial records, our consumer reports, these are all to be viewed by the police now to see if they can come up with a picture of you as a terrorist. Section 507 authorizes the disclosure of your educational records. Well, and then here again, connect this to other things that have been put into place. Goals 2000, this is not a United States program. It came from a UNESCO conference in Jomtien, Thailand, decades before. And the whole federal education program requiring certificates of mastery. And this whole program creates a file on individuals that follows you for the rest of your life. You have no privacy.
Of course, that fits right into the No Child Left Behind, because, of course, it started with Goals 2000, Mastery Learning, and now, of course, it's No Child Left Behind, but it's all the same program sold to the American people by the promise. What the Bush administration wants to do is to return control of education to the local school board and to the parent. And, of course, the reality was it was to centralize all power over the curriculum in Washington, D.C. But how clever it is to say what we want to hear and do just the opposite. And that, of course, they would do that on education. What about this legislation? And should we really trust people who say one thing but have a different agenda?
Well, and how effective, then, this Patriot Act becomes when we marry it with the No Child Left Behind that creates this file, and no longer are we collecting academic information. We're collecting socialization information, and we're asking children personal questions about their parents and their families and things that go on at home. And so by setting up this in the educational sphere and marrying it to this disclosure of your educational records, you really have a very effective police state. Schutzstaffel.
You mean like the SS that they had in Hitler's Germany, or really, of course, really, I think the definition in Genie has it best. It has to do with almost exactly for the homeland security.
Exactly. So right. That comes from Genie.
Right. And the American people really don't understand that they are collecting dossiers on your children now, and all these tests and attitude checks that they're taking, and specifically the test the federal government is going to require, are not dealing with academic achievement, whether they can read, write, they know facts about geography and geometry and mathematics. It's about their attitudes towards God and family and country. And the purpose of education is not to teach, but to change their attitudes towards, you know, themselves and their family, and certainly to make them all happy to be new global citizens, of course, in this utopian new society, which is coming. That's what it's really all about. And the fact that the average American doesn't know that, is blindly following along with what he's being told by his leaders and by the political parties that he follows. And so many of certainly Christians are just blind followers of the Republican Party. Now, I happen to be a Republican, and when the Republican Party does the right thing, I'm solidly with them. But you know, the Republican Party, the leaders of the Republican Party did not support this recall of Davis. Now, eventually they were more or less forced to get on online. And even at the national level, the president, President Bush, didn't want this recall. He wanted to keep Davis in power so that they could run Condoleezza Rice for governor in a couple of years. That was the plan. And then these crazy right-wingers out here, Daryl Issa and a handful of people who really believe in this this idea that the government's supposed to represent us, messed up the whole plan by getting the recall going. And believe me, they're very, very unhappy. The Republican establishment does not want this. But my feeling is, well, why don't we just give him a surprise? Maybe we could even elect somebody who believed in America as the governor of the sixth largest economy in the world. Wouldn't that be exciting?
That would be a real change.
Right. Okay, go ahead, Jeannie. We've got, pardon me, Joan, we've got about 3 minutes before we have to go to the break.
Well, Title VII of the Patriot Act increases information sharing for infrastructure protection, critical infrastructure, and there's a whole report that the government has on what the critical infrastructures are, and that would include agriculture as well as transportation. Section 701 expands regional information sharing, and you know, this whole regionalism concept comes into the whole sustainable development movement again, which comes out of the United Nations. We have lots of regionalization going on. And this system is to facilitate the sharing of information between all levels of law enforcement, federal, state, local. And it amends the Omnibus Crime Control and Safe Streets Act of 1968. It talks about terrorist conspiracies and activities. So here again we're setting up terrorism as the boogeyman, but it's the tool that is to be used to create order out of chaos. And Title VIII strengthens the criminal laws against terrorism, and of course it addresses things like our mass transportation systems, and that's probably not too important to know, but it's, you know, anybody that's, you know, setting fire, derailing a mass transportation. And
no, of course, I'm all against setting fires and derailing mass transportation.
Of course. So, you know, some of these things we would see as positive. I'm just looking for the things that are more limiting to all of our personal freedoms and liberties. But and there's plenty of that in here. It talks about committing an act, including the use of a dangerous weapon. So here again, we have some pretty broad language. Or somebody who attempts, threatens, or conspires to do any of these acts. So your words become, you know, subject to an interpretation of terrorism and need to be closely guarded what you say. And then it moves on to, again, another definition of terrorism, but this time in Section 802, it's a definition of domestic terrorism. And Dr. Stan, domestic terrorism is a section that really opens us up to a much broader interpretation. And the term domestic terrorism means activities that involve acts dangerous to human life, and appear to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population and to influence the policy of the government by intimidation or coercion. This is very general language.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest this evening is Joan Paris. We're talking about the USA Patriot Act, and of course, calling in from Soquel is Tony. Hi, Tony. How are you doing? Tony, are you there? Tony, are you there? Well, I don't know what happened to Tony. Let's see.
I'm here.
Okay, fine. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, you were talking. I don't want to get off the subject, Dr. Stan. And if I do, I apologize. But you were talking about the Gray Davis and the situation in California. And I really think you ought to run.
Well, as I said last night, if I'm nominated, I will not run. And if I'm elected, I will not serve. No, my place, Tony, is right here behind the microphone, trying to get a few people to understand what's going on. And I believe this is what God wants me to do. So,
well, this is why, Dr. Stan, I'm sorry to interrupt, why I think you should run. Okay, not in the belief that you're going to win. Okay, but on the information page of the ballot, you can inform everyone in the state who reads it what's going on.
Well, that really, you, when you're running for political office, you have to get off the radio. And so I'm going to stay here. You could run, and you could do put in the same thing, Tony. But that's not what God's called me to do.
I don't know if I'd get 65 people to sign the...
I'll sign it for you.
Oh, if I knew how to...
You're all going to be coming up with a filing fee. It's pretty steep at that level.
I could manage that.
Okay, do it then.
I don't think I can get 65 signatures.
We'll help you with the signatures.
All right, fine. Anything else, Tony?
Well, I just think you'd make a good candidate.
All right, well, I appreciate it. But domestic tranquility right now is more important. My wife said that she went with me on one time when I ran for Congress and was a Republican congressional candidate, but I think that I wouldn't want to push my luck. So besides that, I enjoy what I'm doing, and I enjoy having opportunity to be here on the radio 5 hours a day. So I'm not going to run. Any other thoughts?
No, but I guess it was just a fun thought.
Okay, I appreciate that so much. Thanks so much for calling, Tony. It's good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
All right, fine. If you're out there in the listening audience and you want to give us a call on any other subject but my candidacy, why give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. It's interesting. I've already had calls from Bill Simon's office, you know, because of the radio station. They're updating their database in preparation for Bill Simon running. I did talk to Congressman Tom McClintock's office today and arranged for him to be on a couple of our programs. And they're, of course, really besieged with calls since Tom has actually thrown his hat in the ring to run for governor. This is really, really an exciting time. You know, it's just possible we might get an honest man who loved America, who believes in the Constitution, in his governor. I don't know whether we will or not, but this is the best chance we've ever had because the other side, the establishment, of course, does not control this. They haven't had time to recoup themselves, and I don't think they're going to have time to create a candidate in the short period of time that we have before the election. I hope I may be mistaken, but it's going to be an exciting time, and each one of you out there really needs to get involved. So go ahead, Joan.
Okay. Section 804 talks about the jurisdiction of crimes committed at U.S. facilities abroad, so overseas, and that would be premises of United States diplomatic, consular, military, or other United States government missions entities. So this could be used to justify our insertion, I guess, in just about any nation around the world, any perceived or actual terrorist activity against anyone having to do with our government overseas. And that would also extend to personal residences of government people. the assets of any terrorist organization, whether it be foreign or domestic. And that's why it was so important to see the domestic terrorism definition, because it's very open-ended. And this is where we have the possibility of Americans coming under all of this legislation. It gets kind of hidden towards the back of this act, but it is there. And any individual, entity, or organization engaged in planning or perpetrating any act of domestic or international terrorism against United States citizens or residents of the United States or their property, and all of those assets, foreign and domestic, are subject to forfeiture. So you have to think in terms of your organizations and who you're associating with, and when you look back at the financial aspects of it, say you set up some type of a financial mechanism for raising money for a patriotic group or an umbrella organization of patriotic groups that are talking about the Constitution. And, of course, these have been identified before as potential terrorists. The people who support our Constitution, that's one of the markers that is used to identify a terrorist. It would be so easy to compromise a whole group of individuals because the language of this bill is so broad. And anybody that's involved in protecting our country really needs to think twice about what they do, because of the way this could entrap people and forever shut them up.
As to our listeners, if you haven't seen that pamphlet that was circulated in Phoenix, Arizona in 1999, you need, of course, to go to my website at RadioLiberty.com, and it's listed there under publications, the FBI pamphlet, and it really talks about how you can tell a terrorist, and of course you want to report all these to the FBI task force, but they talk about the Constitution, among other things, of course, and they believe in the idea of, you know, this sovereign citizen and some of these things. There may be truth in them, but, you know, this idea that people emphasize the Constitution and talk about the Constitution, and they, of course, are potential terrorists. You know, not one word about Islamic terrorism, and yet at the time in 1999, when this report was put out, the man who put this report out was investigating Islamic terrorism, but he just didn't bother to put it in the report. I wonder why not. But go to my website. It's the FBI pamphlet. Look at it. And if you need an original, better one, why, we'll be glad to get it for you. The fact that, you know, that man has not been fired from his job for saying people who support the Constitution are potential terrorists reflects what's really wrong with America today.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, Dr. Stan, because that's the tangible proof we have that connects that to the potential abuses that can come out of the USA Patriot Act. And your website is RadioLiberty.com?
Right.
Okay. In Section 808, this definition of federal crime of terrorism, what was interesting to me is that it also includes, in addition to, you know, congressional cabinet, Supreme Court, and others in our government, it mentions foreign officials, official guests, and internationally protected persons. Well, what's an internationally protected person? I think your listeners can answer that for themselves. But it's fascinating how broad this is. The statute of limitations on terrorism is broadened quite a bit for non-capital offenses, and for capital offenses there is no limitation. And let's see. It's very interesting, Section 813 of the Patriot Act includes acts of terrorism as racketeering activity. And, of course, that makes me think of the RICO Act, and that's been used to prosecute people in, you know, we're thinking mafia, but we're talking about pro-life protesters, you know, the people on the sidewalk supporting the protection of unborn babies. And so we've got that inserted into the Patriot Act also.
Now let's go to Nathan, who's calling and waiting patiently on the line. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing tonight?
Hi. Good evening to both of you. I don't know how relevant this is to the subject, so just you can feel free to cut me off. But I believe there is a sort of there is a biblical perspective on this I'd like to share, if I might, if that's all right.
Sure. Go ahead.
If I can bring the religion in tonight. In the Bible, when you look at the growth of a tyranny or growth of some type of a conquest, it's almost always, in fact, I don't know if there's an instance where it isn't, some type of chastisement. I think we have to ask ourselves, you know, in 1991, our nation assumed the obligation of divine law, and yet we have not followed it. We've apostated just like Babylon did of old, you know, having been built previous to Nimrod, having been built on the divine laws as given to Noah and to Shem. But Nimrod led a rebellion. Now, this isn't strictly in the Bible, but biblical scholars have been able to discern this. And in a sense, we're following the same path as old Babylon did, of apostasy. And we were granted world power because of our agreeing to follow divine law. We're probably the only nation in history other than biblical Israel to have done that.
I love the analogy, Nathan, and that's exactly where I see it.
And yet we've apostated. Well, the flip side, though, is not having done it, we bring this upon ourselves, and yet I can't get Americans to really see that. They complain about the governmental structures that are erected over us, but they want to complain, but do people repent? Do people assume God's governmental structure and
well,
not that of earthly tyrannies?
Well, and kings, and when you go through all of the different kings that the Jews had, and the ones that tore down the altars to Baal, which the Baal worship, you know, came through Nimrod. The ones that completely tore those down were kings that lived long and prosperous lives. And the ones that weren't were, you know, they died horrible deaths very shortly, and the people suffered under them because of that. So it's, you know, God hasn't changed.
You know, a very interesting book we carry is called Idols in the House by Ted Flynn. And, of course, he's approaching this from exactly your perspective, Nathan, talking about, you know, the lessons of the Old Testament and how when the Jews, you know, obeyed God's law, they prospered. And when they turned against God, they, of course, suffered and were chastised. And I see this thing happening today. You're absolutely right. And, of course, I just wish that the average individual could understand, as we've said so many times, we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield. And as long as we don't address it from a spiritual point of view, we'll never succeed politically.
Well, I just wish more people could see it that way.
Well, that's what we keep trying to do. That's why we keep this same theme 5 hours a day. And anyway, I appreciate your remarks.
You.
Anything else, Nathan?
No. Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I appreciate that so much because ultimately you need to get that spiritual perspective. Dr. Stan, Section 814 of the Patriot Act talks about the deterrence and prevention of cyber terrorism and protection of protected computers. Well, you know, this has never been applied to Los Alamos, but then, you know, and this section is several pages long, but it talks about the term person in relation to cyber terrorism, meaning any individual, firm, corporation, educational institution, financial institution, government entity, or legal or other entity. And this is the part that gives teeth to the compliance officers that come into a corporation or a firm or, you know, any type of entity or institution. And you must have compliance to certain strictures that have to do with the use of computers, company-owned or otherwise. Let's see, what else is good in this act?
Yeah. Is there anything good in the act? I haven't heard anything good. Is there anything bad? All you're doing is telling me the bad things.
Well, we just want, you know, the listeners to know what things in here they should look out for, because this is targeted at the heart of the liberties and freedoms that are embodied in our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Title 10 of this Act provides the First Responders Assistance Act, And the first responders, of course, first responders are your police and your firefighters, and I suppose your ambulance drivers. And this provides funding for them to purchase technology and equipment also for intelligence gathering and analysis functions, including wiretap, pen links, cameras, and computer hardware and software. So this would be your street surveillance. So everybody that can be deputized or brought into this, your first responders, you know, are being subverted into this whole awful agenda of spying and reporting on the American people. It calls for the creation of mobile command posts. Well, in here in our county, the Department of Transportation provided a lot of the funding for a mobile command post. We saw it exhibited at a DARE event a couple of years ago here in Santa Cruz. And of course, we see all of these militaristic type of things being incorporated into our sheriffs and police departments so that the provisions of the Patriot Act and other legislation that's being implemented can be enforced upon the American people. There's a coordination called for among neighboring law enforcement agencies and a sharing of resources. And again, this is that whole concept of regionalization in intelligence gathering and analysis. And it calls for the use of memorandums of understanding and other best practices to implement this. And there are many grants that are being offered to the first responders in order to be effective in implementing the Patriot Act. There's a section in Title 10 authorizing funds for DEA police training in South and Central Asia. Well, what's that got to do with terrorism in the United States? Well, I guess that's obvious. It's the drugs. But it's interesting the way this was worded. It's authorized to be appropriated to the president not less than $5 million for 2002 for regional anti-drug training in the Republic of Turkey. Listen to that, Dr. Sand. Turkey. This was what? You know, this was early on in 2002 before we went to war in Iraq. And what was the role of Turkey? Why would this legislation have been worded this way unless this was to be used as a bribe or a payoff in order to funnel our troops through Turkey? It's almost an off the wall. It doesn't fit into the whole rest of this document. It's amazing.
Well, I think they have long-range planning, but those darn Turks wouldn't let us put our troops in there. In fact, the people, of course, were up in arms at the idea of American troops coming in through Turkey. And so I wonder if we're going to give them the money now, or we're simply going to just withhold it and say, you're bad boys, and so you can't have it. Now, the military there, of course, really doesn't represent the people. They, of course, had a coup years ago. They have this facade of a democracy where, of course, the parliament or the legislature is elected, and that's controlled pretty well by the radical Islamists. And if they had a free and open election, they'd win the whole country, and it would be another country in Osama bin Laden's lap. We're doing everything we can to drive the Muslim populations into radical Islam and to give up the moderate form of Islam that they had and embrace radicalism. You know, we're making terrible mistakes. In fact, I remember that picture that was in the in one of the newspapers immediately before our invasion of Iraq, and it showed Osama bin Laden, and he was sort of pointing like that picture, you know, of Uncle Sam, I want you, and he's pointing, and he said, I want you to invade Iraq because it's going to help recruitment of people to my cause. Make my day. Please invade Iraq. And here's Osama bin Laden with his turban on. And yet, of course, that's exactly what we've done. And, of course, all throughout Pakistan and Afghanistan and all throughout the Muslim countries, why, of course, Osama bin Laden is far more popular than George Bush. And with that, of course, more and more people embracing this radical form of Islam, which is going to, of course, eventually result in their death and destruction. So what a terrible tragedy. But then, of course, is it simply by accident that we're creating the best enemy our money can buy?
Order of chaos.
Right.
This was passed in October 24th of 2001. And, of course, we've given just millions and billions to countries all around the world. So It doesn't seem to matter. And this just provides for unlimited funding for so many more areas. Another interesting section in Title 10 allows temporary authority to contract with local and state governments for performing security functions at our United States military installations. So here again, we're really blurring the lines between the police and the military, posse comitatus. And the other sad commentary there would be, you know, we have sent so many of our young men and women overseas that there's not many of them left here to protect Americans. A few other things.
Now, what are they going to do with posse comitatus? Does it talk about that?
Well, no, it doesn't. In the Brahimi report, you see it called more for that, and also when you read the National Security in the 21st Century, Dr. Stan, it talks about, it mentions posse comitatus and the blurring of the lines between the police and the military. It says it's already begun to occur.
Now, for our listeners out there who really aren't acquainted with posse comitatus, could you explain to them what that is and why that is so fundamental to our freedom and why that is under attack today?
Well, it gives a dividing line, a very strict dividing line between the police and the military, and it says that the military will not be used to police us because the function of military is war, and police have traditionally had the authority of keeping the public peace.
And, of course, the purpose of the military is to kill people or, of course, and to break things. I think that was the Rush Limbaugh's definition. I think he's absolutely right. The military is trained to kill, and, of course, you put them into a police position, and they're going to kill people. That's what they're trained to do. They're not equipped with, pistols and things of that sort. They have high-powered rifles. And we've seen time and time again when the military has been unleashed. It's not that they're fault, nothing against them. Most of them are good Americans, but you put into a difficult position where you feel your life is threatened, and you shoot first and ask questions afterwards. So the posse comitatus was to limit the use of the military against civilians in the United States. It could be used against civilians in another country, but if we were going to maintain our freedom, why we had to have this as a basic principle in America, the American military will not be used against American citizens. And of course, the Brahimi Report wants to blur that, wants to do away with that.
Exactly.
Oh, we've got to be able to use the military against the people. Why? Because the ultimate goal is a ruling elite put in power by a military class. And of course, that's exactly what Plato wrote about in his Republic, and that's exactly what they intend today. A ruling dictatorship, a massive police and military force to keep the people in line, and then, of course, the return to a feudalistic state.
And again, when you look at this in the broader context of other things that were being done, the 29 Palms questionnaire that was given to our troops, would you fire upon an American citizen? Why are they conditioning our troops with questions like that? Again, it's to blur the line between the police and the military so that they can remove this posse comitatus and use the military against American people. So this is an ongoing process. It doesn't happen overnight. The National Security Report, the New World Coming, says it will happen so gradually as to be not even noticed by the American people. There's another section in here that talks about hazmat licenses, but it never mentions anything about the truck traffic from Mexico. And we're just about through this, Dr. Stan.
Well, it's a good thing because we've only got six more minutes before we turn into pumpkins.
Well, one other thing here, it mentions government research and preparedness and response programs needing to utilize private sector expertise and resources. And, of course, because there are so many, just preceding this, it's talking about new vaccines and treatments to be used for biochemical attacks. So here you have this wording in the legislation which would favor contracts with the huge pharmaceuticals. So this is a real benefit for them when you have all of this open-ended funding. That's where the money is going to go. And finally, there is something in here that says that actions that are necessary to achieve these policies that are stated are to be carried out in a public-private partnership involving corporate and non-governmental organizations. Dr. Stan, and if your seasoned listeners know that, you know, when you marry government and corporations, what type of government structure you have, this is what Mussolini used. And, of course, the non-governmental organization is a civil society, and to be a member of that, you have to be approved by the United Nations. If I could give my own favorite quote from Isaiah, Dr. Stan, it said in chapter 10, 2,700 years ago, it was written, "I have removed the boundaries of the people and have robbed their treasuries. So I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. My hand has found like a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathers eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth. And there was no one who moved his wing nor opened his mouth with even a peep."
Now, who is that actually speaking? Is that who is actually talking there?
The king of Assyria.
All right, fine. And so the king of Assyria was, of course, a very, very wicked man. And of course, he was a tyrant. And, of course, what he's saying is, I took over with very little resistance.
Exactly. And that's what we need to guard against today, is we need to get out there and shake our wings and certainly open our mouths. Because just a few of us speaking out and standing up against these bullies, when you do that, they really have nothing to stand on, and this needs to crumble. But again, it's a spiritual battle, and unless we, turn from our wicked ways and humble ourselves
and pray and right
the face of the Lord, we really have no hope. But since we do have a God, the God that created the world, we do have hope. We have every possibility of overcoming the evil in the world, because we have been so equipped to do that, Dr. Stan. And that's the encouragement and the hope that people need to see, because if we only focus on the physical manifestations of this demonic agenda, what they're doing to the education systems, what they're doing to transportation and the environment, you know, we can get out there as minions and attack all of those, and indeed we must do that, but unless we use the spiritual tools that have been given to us, then we don't have any hope. So that's why we need the leadership of the church to come forward and to rise up and to take us into this next century in combating the evil that is so well arrayed and funded before us.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. And that was just perfect timing. We just at the very end of the program. Joan, I want to thank you so much for doing all the work to put together an understanding of what the USA Patriot Act is, and I hope our listeners will perhaps even want to get this four-tape set we're going to put together so you can understand at least what the first U.S. Patriot Act involves, and then we'll cover the second USA Patriot Act. Thank you so much for doing all the work
you've done. Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you.
And you too. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've been talking to Joan Paris, and I hope you've got a pretty good grasp of what this is all about. A massive increase of government power over our lives in the name of fighting terrorism, but not Islamic terrorism, of course.
You must understand.
Not one word about Islamic terrorism there. Not anything about Osama bin Laden or Muhammad Adam. But, of course, we've redefined terrorism. They're those who don't want to go along with the new agenda. Pray for America. Pray for revival. And, of course, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you for the last program of this week, Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.